After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
Hi, everyone. It's Raghu with Mind Rolling, and I'm back here with a wonderful new episode with Jai Uttal. And Jai is a long, long time friend and went to India. We met him over there when we went with Ram Dass back to see Neem Karoli Baba. And we have a wonderful chat here. We haven't seen each other or done a podcast in quite some time. We haven't seen each other because of the pandemic either in some time. And it was just delightful. And Jai, so you know, he's a direct disciple of the one of the greatest living while he was alive musicians, greatest musicians in the world, Ali Akbar Khan. And Jai is really well represented by his incredible array of music for last few decades, really. And I'm really happy to have been able to chat with him about what he's up to and so on. And but one of the main reasons I am doing this intro is because Jai started out, and I wanted you to know who this is that's singing, because he started out with this incredible invocation. And he has such, it's in India called Bhav, just heartfelt expression. And sorry about doggy in the back here. And he just is an emblem for, you know, Ali Akbar Khan used to be called one of the greatest musicians that ever lived, the emperor of melody. And Jai absolutely has inherited that. And I learned so much from Jai, I got to tell you, over many, many years. And so I'm really happy about this episode. It also highlights this new Soul Land compilation that we're coming out with in the next few weeks. This is the end of May in 2022. It's so, of course, Jai is represented on it, as well as Nico and DJ Drez and John Forte and Rising Appalachia and Ram Dass has a cut. Yeah, Ram Dass has a single on the compilation. We all come from God. It's terrific. And just go to find Soul Land on ramdass.org, and it'll give you all the information. ramdass.org/soulland or music in general. Navigate it. We'll find it. So here is Jai in a delightful back and forth around music and the relationship to the spirit.
Om Hari Om. Guru Deo Maheshwara Guru Sakshat Para Brahma Tasmai Shri Guru Namaha. Janamulam Guru Mati Pujamulam Guru Padam Mantramulam Guru Vakyam Mokshamulam Guru Kripa Mokshamulam Guru Kripa Sadgurudeva Bhagavan Ki Jai Narad Ki Jai.
For those of you who might not know where this incredible prayer came from, his name is Jai Utal. Welcome to Mind Rolling, Jai.
Hey, Raghu. The prayer didn't come through me. I mean, it didn't come from me. I hope I can say it came through me, but it's such an ancient prayer. Mm.
To the Guru.
Yeah, prayer to the Guru. Mm.
So I'm really happy to have Jai on Mind Rolling. We haven't done this in a couple of years, I think, at least.
5 years, maybe.
Yeah, maybe even that long. Was David involved? David Silver, my original co-host?
Yeah, he was.
So then it is. It's a number of years. We still do them, David and I, occasionally. But he's been writing his epic book, so he's been working on that. And of course, he's the one who directed this wonderful movie that Jai and I are involved with, Brilliant Disguise, the Samadhi of K.C. Tiwari, who was very special to many of us, but certainly Jai and I.
Very moving. That movie was, I loved it, watching it.
Everybody, that'll be available through Love, Serve, Remember Films in September. We're trying to figure it all out now. So, Jai, just as I said before we got on, so in preparation for the podcast, I started to go through the music, and I started from the earliest record, which is called Footprints, and I started listening to tracks. I don't know. I mean, I went on to a magical mystery tour. Now, I worked with Jai a long time ago when all of this first started. We've gone through all sorts of stuff together, and here we are. And the actual first studio that we worked in was in Montreal, which is where I'm from, with my ex-brother-in-law, Bruce Gonofsky. And can you believe that of course, then went out to California and finished up this, that, and the other around it.
Yeah. But I loved that time in Montreal. You know, it was also I've been in studios, but that was, it was the first
Basement.
Real project. It was the first real project. And Bruce was great in the studio. And plus, just like hanging out in Montreal a little bit was great. I remember that so well.
Bagels. Real bagels.
Bagels, people speaking French.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Cosmopolitan. So, but what it did for me was because, here, just giving some of the names of the different songs, like Pahari, for instance, which is the hills of the foothills of the Himalayas. So that whole area that we were in, the stretch from Nainital to Koh Samui, was called, and the people are called Pahari, actually, and the dialect is Pahari.
Yeah.
And so what you did back then to express that feeling of just hanging out in those hills, it just came to me like that. Absolutely just, what else, like, bus has come, okay? Nobody would get this. What is that? Bus has come. But meanwhile, it's what we were sitting around in Maharaji. It would be towards the end of the afternoon and basically wanted to get rid of us. So, whoops, bus has come, he'd say in English, right?
Yeah. And that song has such a kind of mysterious but also like yearning. No, I don't want to go. The bus has come, but I don't want to go. But we got to go. And we know it's all okay. But, you know, it captured some of that emotional disconnect. I don't want to go.
Yeah.
He's telling us we have to go.
And we wouldn't go, by the way. And then he would, jao, you know, which means go. He'd say it in a soft, sweet voice. And then that thing changed when he really wanted us to go. He's shouting, jao.
Does the audience of this podcast know who he is?
Yeah, we haven't said anything about who he is. Well, yes, I mean, we do talk about Neem Karoli Baba a lot. And those of you who are watching on YouTube can see a picture behind Jai of Maharaji sitting in a chair in his backyard with Siddhima, who was with him for decades and decades.
And she spoke Pahari.
She was Pahari, yeah, absolutely. Whereas Maharaji came from the plains. He lived near Agra.
Yeah.
So, so that's the big he that we talk about. Then there is, what else is in there? So the prominent song, and we're going to play it right now, at least part of it, because it's 10 minutes long or something, is called Raghupati. And actually, we would get on a bus. When we finally did get on that bus and go back to the hotel in Nainital where we were staying, the ticket guy would come in. He'd be on the bus. And then he'd come and collect everybody's ticket and basically lead us in kirtan. Raghupati Raghava Raja Ram. Remember? And anyhow, so this Raghupati that you put together is extraordinary, everybody. When you listen, first of all, has Lakshmi Shankar, this great Indian classical singer. Is she still with us, Jai? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, me neither.
Actually, I'm not sure.
It's a sister of Ravi Shankar.
Something.
Sister
of maybe once removed or something like that. You know, the Indian families are.
Well, there's no. Yeah,
but definitely a close relative.
Yeah. Here's the ingredient that makes this. You will never hear anything like this, as far as, I mean, there have been Indo-fusion things that go on, but in this particular case, and it's rare. And Jai was friendly with Don Cherry. And Don was one of the great trumpet players in the greatest part of the jazz era, 50s and 60s and stuff. And, we've talked enough about it. Now we're going to play. Let's play some of this, okay, so everybody gets a feeling for for
I
that
this
moment.
This is Don's last recorded track.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know.
Yeah, his teeth were coming out.
Oh, right.
And so. He played more. He did some performances, but his last recording with trumpet. Mm. It was poignant. It was bittersweet. And he was such a beautiful guy and such a troubled guy.
Yeah, yeah. So here we are. Let's play this. Raghupati.
Oh,
So I think, everybody, you get the idea of the just the incredible array of colors that are in this music. And of course, we can't even talk to Jai without mentioning one thing in terms of his early antecedents as a musician and artist, and that's Ali Akbar Khan. Jai, I have to tell you, I have a lot of things to be thankful for you, introducing me to aspects of Indian music that I would not have had that experience. And maybe primary, though, is all the great melodies. The other day, we had a satsang here in a kirtan, right? And so I was singing some, and John Seskovich was here, too. You know John? He did a few things, you know, sweet John. We ended up all using all the kirtans we sang, aside from the Julisa, was your melody. So we called it, okay, it's a Jai Utal kirtan. So we have that as well, to be quite thankful.
I think that's the blessing that Ali Akbar Khan gave to me. I mean, he was so generous with all of his students, you know, advanced or beginners, it didn't matter. He was like a well. But somehow, you know, and I could never say I mastered raga or anything. You know, I don't know how to do a full performance in classical music. But Khansa kind of gave, you know, I don't know, it just injected me this thing of being able to make melodies and the kind of reverence for a beautiful melody. You know, the more beautiful the melody, you know, to the inner aesthetic, the more beauty you can find that you offer to God. I mean, it's just a thing. I'm so thankful to him, the years with him. And I'm still super friendly with his family.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that at some point too. But just to say, Jai, for me, again, this is all relational to my perspective and what I love. And Jai's introduction to us at the time, to Ali Akbar Khan, who, by the way, Yehudi Menuhin, one of the greatest Western classical musicians, violinists, used to say, the greatest musician alive right now is Ali Akbar Khan.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all.
Absolutely. I mean, we got it right. I mean, thank you. Thank you to be going into a studio with Ali Akbar Khan. The first record that we did was called Journey. And see him in the moment creating these melodic structures that everybody had to just, okay, we're going to go there now, you know.
Working on those albums. You know, I was studying with him before even I went to India. So, you know, we already had that deep teacher-student relationship. But working on that album, you know, then he would come to my house and I would go to his house. And, you know, it just revealed a whole nother side of him. And, oh, what a beautiful. I remember one time we were sitting in my living room and in Berkeley, you know, a small little funky house I had. And we were drinking because he really liked his scotch. And I went along right there with him. And I asked him at one point, what does it feel like, Khansa, what does it feel like to be a master of music, to be a master of your instrument, to be a master of this deep tradition, to just be a master at what you do? And he got very quiet, you know, and he was smoking a cigarette as well. And he said, you know, it's very, very rare that I feel that everything is in alignment. You know, sometimes, you know, like the audience is weird or the sound system is weird or my instrument won't stay in tune or my body is bothering me. And it's every once in a while, everything is all kind of in sync. I don't remember the word he used. And then I feel a kind of ecstasy. But, you know, music is an ocean. And the deeper you swim, the further away the opposite shore becomes. And then he got very quiet and continued smoking a cigarette. And, you know, what a humility. And I mean, he acknowledged that there was times when the mastery was complete, but then there was this acknowledgement that that it's way more vast. Music is way more vast than any one human person can understand.
Yeah.
That's great.
He played an instrument called the sarod, and that may be best described as, I think you told this to me, that it was tantamount to the closest to the human voice. Colored wise,
I feel
expression.
It's so, particularly the way he played it. It can be very percussive, which in that way is different from the voice. But the way he played it, no one played it ever before or after, and the nuances were so vocal. And in fact, you know, I didn't sing when I first started studying with him, and he insisted that every person who studied with him had to also study vocal music, because he said all music comes from the voice. And there was an Indian woman teaching you know, the traditional Indian classical raga songs, and so I was very shy to sing and very, you know, self-conscious and self-critical, but that kind of broke the, or at least started breaking the ice for singing. I would never have thought of singing before that.
Anyhow, we're going to put links in to Khan Sahib, as he was called, Ali Akbar Khan's, some of his recordings, and maybe Jai will make a suggestion too, and we'll just get the link up there, because they are outstanding. I mean, they are, many a times they are just exactly the same as a sitting practice, but you get the benefit of riding these waves without having to think you're doing anything, but you get absorbed into it in the same way you might through chanting, meditation, whatever you do.
That's the beauty of kirtan also. You know, it can be so sort of, I won't say easy, it's not the right word, but yeah, easy. It's just easy to get into chanting. And you don't really, you're not really trying, or you don't really know that you're like going into a meditation, but suddenly, you know, you're just so involved in it because your mind gets sort of enchanted by the song and the melody, and your emotions get all awakened, but it's repetition. So, you know, like you get so deep without really particularly trying very hard.
Yeah.
I feel sometimes I just got to show up, basically.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I had an experience the other night. I know this is not, you know, in our podcast list of subjects. I did my first in-person kirtan in quite many months, you know, and it was in Sebastopol near here, and it was outside at night. And it was a beautiful scene, you know, it was a really beautiful scene. But next door, there was, how do you say it, quinceanera, a Mexican family. When the young woman turns 15, they have a big party with lots of loud music. So it was right next door to us. And, you know, while I was singing, I didn't hear it. But as soon as I would stop singing, the music was so loud. It was really a challenge, but it, you know, what do you do? There's so many challenges, and all we can do with whatever challenge we meet is we just try to go to a deeper space and not ignore it, not pretend it's not there, but, you know, not get freaked out by it.
Well, in this case, it was probably, they were joyful.
They were joyful. I don't know if it was a competition, but...
Is that where Ezra was with you?
Yes.
That's a whole other blessing that you got going.
Yeah, my son is 17 years old. He's a brilliant musician. And, you know, something that I actually popped into my mind is that, well, you know, he's not like into Indian music, but he's really fascinated by Indian scales. Mm. So while he plays keyboard, so while he's doing his jazz and his rock and all the different things that he's exploring, he sometimes just goes right into these raga scales that I've taught him, and it's just amazing.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah. Huh.
So a part of Footprints was sending me also, of course, back to India, which is where Jai and I met. Well, we were going to see Maharaji Neem Karoli Baba. And just give a little backstory on you arrived there with a couple of people. And I need to be straightened out because I thought it was one thing. My memory, it's funny how our memories are. They construct things that maybe weren't, you know,
I know.
According to our proclivities or projections.
I'm afraid to even tell stories of my past because I don't even know if they're true. I think they're true.
I wrote them down. I had a diary, so I checked my shit on that. but you did come and you were involved with a guru that you came to India to see. Can we start there? That's true.
Yeah, and we'll leave that guru's name.
Yes.
I came there thinking that he was my guru. I hadn't met him, but I had met his disciples. And anyway, we arrived, my friends and I arrived in Delhi and found that he was in jail for not just murder, but mass murder.
And it's not a good start going to Indian finding.
So it was like, oh, okay. And but within 1 week, we were in Vrindavan with Maharaji. You know, I had read Be Here Now, Ram Dass's, you know, first amazing seminal book.
Wait, what time was this? Okay, here's where I want to get to. What, 1971...
The end of 1971, yeah.
The end of 1971. So the book actually just came out in 1971 in the fall.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so then it was just, wow.
You must have maybe even seen, you know, the box set or something like that. From Bindu to Ojas, mm-hmm. which is what Be Here Now is taken from.
Yeah.
So you knew about Ram Dass, point.
Yeah, and I had met Ram Dass. And when did Ram Dass first come back from India? It was 69.
When he first came back from India in 68, early 68. 68.
Yeah, so I had seen him speaking. And actually, my friends and I, this was in Berkeley, we had a kind of like a hippie ashram, sort of an ashram, you know, but it wasn't an ashram. It was just a bunch of like-minded people living together. Mm. And we invited Ram Dass over after one of his talks, happenings, they weren't just talks. And he came over and we sang kirtan. We had a living room, kind of big kirtan place. And then he had dinner with us and, you know, it was just so great. I can't imagine that he just actually said yes and came over. Now, in retrospect, but so, you know, I considered him a friend, I didn't know him well, of course, but, you know, then when I went to India, I wasn't intending to see Maharaji. I didn't have a plan to see Maharaji, but that contact with Ram Dass and reading Be Here Now and getting very moved by Ram Dass's, the autobiographical part of that book. Mm. So I guess Maharaji had planted the seed and just I had to go through this crazy drama around this other guru. But it was pretty fast, you know? Like, it was pretty quick that I was in Vrindavan with Maharaji.
So you met Ram Dass in Delhi, I think, right? And then he's...
No, so we were cut loose, you know, from... Our plan was cut us loose. And so... I was in a bookstore in New Delhi, a spiritual bookstore, and the man told me that Ram Dass was giving classes up at the Palace Heights in Connaught Circle, this hotel. So we went to the Palace Heights, and they told us that Ram Dass had left Delhi and gone to Vrindavan to see his guru. So we didn't have anything else to do. We had no idea what to do. So we said, well, let's go to Vrindavan and see Ram Dass. And that turned into meeting Maharaji. Yeah.
and that's where we met as well. I was down there with Ram Dass. And just one more anecdote that I would bet a lot that you don't remember this, but maybe. Okay, so we all went to, sorry, everybody, we're kind of reminiscing and telling stories about that time and related to Jai's music and so on, but we're having fun. Hope you are too. We were in a city in India called Allahabad, where there's these sacred grounds right by the confluence of the Ganges and the Yamuna and underground Saraswati. And they have these Kumbh Melas there all the time. I mean, they're extraordinary, multi-millions of people. And there was a man who was a devotee of Maharaji who lived there named Dada Mukherjee, and Maharaji used to spend winters pretty much, and certainly in the latter years and when we knew him, at his house. So we would go, they would put us up in different houses around because we were, you know, 30, 40, maybe even 50 people. Westerners, which now seems like nothing.
I know.
Can you imagine?
We were so lucky. And that was the largest it ever got.
Yeah.
And usually it was more like 20 or something.
Yeah. So there we were. And so they'd put us in different places. You were put into a house with Gangadhar and Janaki, I believe, who you would come with. And one other woman. Yeah.
Whose name I can't. No, go on, because then we'll see where our memories diverge.
Okay, yeah. Anyhow, you were there with some people and you were put in a house. I was put in another house, to stay, other Indian devotees. I came walking on my way to see Maharaji. We'd go there first thing in the morning and spend the day. And you popped out of the door with a friend and you were not feeling well. And you said, I said, what's wrong? And you said, well, there's mold. It's really damp in this house and there's mold and I have asthma. So it's not a good combo. So I thought, wow, that's terrible. Maybe I should say something. So we go to, this is so terrible. We go to where Dada's house, where Maharaji was. And there he is in the room, and there's just people milling around and having darshan and talking. And there was one guy that Maharaji had appointed to take care of placing the Westerners in these different residences. And I said to that guy, you know, I have an idea. Why don't you switch, like Jai could come, because where we're staying is very dry. He has asthma. It's damp there. It's not really good for him at all. And we could, you know, I was kind of orchestrating and being the producer, which I have gotten myself into trouble.
No, but it was also very caring.
Yeah, well, it was just in front of me. I couldn't avoid it. Anyhow, Maharaji sees me talking to him. I don't remember his name and says, what does he want? Meaning me. He says, well, you know, his friend not feeling well, thought he could be in a different house. And so Maharaji screamed at him, what? Shut the fuck up. I'll tell you what to do, or something like that. Of course, I couldn't understand it fully. It was in Hindi, and back then I knew almost nothing. But somebody later told me he was just pissed at the guy for, you know, remanaging the situation and listening to some dingbat Westerner. I have never forgotten this.
I did get switched.
Yeah. You did. I think you did.
But I didn't get... Oh, God, it's hard to really remember. I didn't get switched to where you were.
No.
I got switched to another apartment with people I didn't know, like a bunch of Australian hippies, and it was right over a bazaar.
Okay. How'd that work out for you? See? Shut the fuck up.
I guess it worked out fine.
Oh, God help us. I mean, talk about precious times, but... So, all the way to... How about, like, full circle in terms of looking at the different songs and so on? Here was one that you... I think it's the latest thing that's available in your catalog. It's a single, Holy Madman.
Oh, yeah. That's the latest one.
That is. So, everybody, I want to play some of this at the very least. Let's just play it because I have some thoughts about what it reminded me of, actually. Okay, here we go. Holy Madman.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna.
This is also highly unusual, of course. Jai plays banjo, and to use that as part of Maha Mantra, which is the Hare Krishna mantra, which is known as the great mantra in India, which we are very fond of. I mean, the one thing, you know, that we brought back when Jai was already, you know, highly evolved in terms of musicianship. So picking up different melodies, walking around India and all of that stuff was like nothing. The rest of us, including Krishnadas, he was really just learning, you know, how to apply some of what he was hearing in a way that made sense for him. And after Maharaji left, Jai, and you can tell this story because it's fantastic, basically, I think it was in the 80s that you did this with visiting with the Baals of Bengal. Was it in the 80s, I think?
Let's see. No, it was my second trip to India. So the first trip was 71. So the second trip was like 74, I think, something like that. And
Oh, really?
We went to...
Because we did that thing in 74, you know, the popping around in, with our group then, going up to Portland. And that was in 74, winter. Remember we got stuck in Gurneyville?
Snowstorm. So, but was it before Gurneyville?
No, because 73, Maharaji left. Yeah, so right. I think probably mid-70s. So.
Yeah, and there's a sect of bhaktas, of wandering devotional singers in Bengal called the Baals. And the word Baal means God intoxicated. And I had heard some albums of the Baals of Bengal and just loved the music and just like was so drawn to it. So my friend Gangadhar and I went to Calcutta and then, you know, we just like tried to figure out how to meet the Baals. So we went to this little village in West Bengal called Shantiniketan and got a place to stay and just walked around the streets until we saw a Baal singer. And we followed him and there was this, you know, village mela, like a little festival. And these singers were just so beautiful. And I walked up to one of the singers, one of the main singers afterwards, you know, said hi, and he said, "You have any acid?" Anyway, and then we started a friendship, and then Gangadhar and I got this house, and a different Baal singer would come and give us classes, give us lessons, and the house became every evening a wandering group would come and sing and hang out. It was just one of the most amazing experiences. And so the vibe of Holy Madmen, it's, you know, it's not a literal copy of anything, but it's like a Bengali song and like a Bengali Baal chant, but it's played on the banjo and there's accordion and trombone and
it's amazing. And by the way, I mean, I first learned of the Baals because of the recording that was done by the band who played with Bob Dylan. If anybody listen to the band. The band is
everybody's
amazing.
Everybody's got to know the band. That's like one of the best group of musicians ever.
So, yeah. Well, let's put that in the show notes so people can link over to it. But and also this record and the Baal that we met, or you had met, but I met later, Purnadas Baal, who had the voice. Yeah, I mean, of all the Baals that I've ever
heard. He was like the
heard.
Masterful one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The Bob Dylan album, John Wesley Harding, you know, the cover has Dylan and a local farmer and two Baals in the picture. And one of them is Purnadas and the other one is Lakshman Das. And Lakshman Das was the one who was singing at this village mela who asked me for the LSD.
Oh, really? that's okay.
Yeah, and they had a record called The Baals at Big Pink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Phenomenal record. And there's something about the core of what you got with these musicians and this culture that's permeated your music forever. Yeah. Right. I mean, that's really.
Yeah. It's kind of indescribable that I was only with the Bowels for 4 months. You know, I went to India like you. We went many, many times and listening to the temple singers and singing with the temple singers, particularly in Kenchi, you know, was such a big influence. But that 4 months with the Bowels, I don't know, that just completely, between them, Ali Apar Khan, and Jimi Hendrix, they completely transformed my musical DNA.
Perfect. Yeah. Very perfect, they would say. Oh, God. As I said this to Jai before, I was just trying to pick out a few songs we could play in the podcast. And by the end of it, I realized, okay, that would be more than like two or three podcasts without us talking. It would be the only way we could play all. I mean, so Jai and I were just talking. I said, okay, well, I'm going to do a Spotify playlist. That's the best way. We'll reference it. So look for a Spotify playlist when the show notes, just go down to the show notes. I'm sure we can link it. There must be a way.
And let me know also so I can, yeah. I can post it. I mentioned before, and I just want to mention it again, that my wife, Nubia, and I did a project starting January 1st on Instagram for 108 days, a legacy of songs, of 108 songs by me. And each one of them went into a Spotify playlist called Legacy of Songs. And we had been talking last year, you know, a bunch of different people said, Jai, why don't you write a book? But I don't have, my memory is so bad. So I decided, like, you know, if I write a book, it's going to be called Sing or Die, My Life in 108 Songs. And just talk about the experience of the songs. You know, then I go, the friend who seems to have the impeccable memory of everything and has been my friend since college was Gangadhar. But then yesterday, Nubia and I were talking, well, maybe Gangadhar is just making up all these stories too. And he claims them as being accurate. And I can't argue with him because I just don't remember.
That's why it was good to have a diary back then. I'm glad I did that.
I know. I have a diary too from that time, but it's just songs.
Oh, well. Makes sense.
It makes sense.
That alone could be a worthy book format, you know, those songs and what they represented and how they related to your experience.
Yeah. I wish I had a clearer memory of my time with Maharaji. I mean, there's certain very, very clear, indelible memories that I have. But a lot of it is like, well, what happened? You know, I think because I was 19, I very unformed as a human being, whatever that actually means. But, you know, I was still kind of a kid. And I feel like a lot of what happened sitting in front of Maharaji happened not in my conscious mind, you know. There's a sort of fog and yet a molecular feeling. The feeling is very strong, but the actual memories are not. Do you know what I mean?
No, because he was yelling at me all the time. I remember that.
I remember when he hit me on the head a bunch of times.
Right.
That's very clear memories. Yeah. Yeah. Can I tell you what happened one time?
Yeah.
So, you know, we would see Maharaji and we would bring offerings. And it's a kind of a normal traditional thing in India. And you'd either bring fruit or flowers or some kind of offering. So I usually stopped at the fruit wala and got some fruit and brought us an offering. So this particular day I got this bag of berries because I hadn't seen them ever before on the fruit, you know, those beautiful big fruit stands. I got them and I went back to my little room and I washed them and I put them back in the little sack and the sack broke open because the sacks were just made out of newspaper or something. And the berries went all over the floor and I was like really upset. So I picked them up and I washed again each one individually and wrapped them in a cloth and went to see Maharaji. And then this was Vrindavan. And then when I got there, I offered them to him and he opened it up And he said, in English, berries. And he started eating each berry very slowly and kept saying berries. And
in English?
In English. And usually he didn't even eat the offering. And so he was eating, he ate this, I don't remember if he ate the whole bag, but in my memory it says that he ate the whole bag, but I don't know if that's true, but I know that he ate them. And then he told us to leave, and that particular time when I bowed in front of him, he hit me really hard, 3 times in my head. Yeah. So then, and the whole experience was kind of like, wow. Then I start walking back to the Jaipuria Bhavan, the little hotel, and I'm walking on the dirt road, and next door to Maharaji's temple was a sadhu named Hatiwala Baba, I think. And he was an old man, and he had an elephant.
Yeah, that's it.
And so, and Maharaji had given me a banana as prasad. So I'm walking there, and I just stop, and the elephant is sort of standing there by the fence, just off the dirt path, and I'm looking at this elephant. And the elephant's looking at my banana. So after a while, I said, okay. And I gave the elephant my banana. And he stood up and crossed his, I can't do it, but crossed his legs like in a stand and put out his trunk. It was like he embodied Krishna for a minute. In that stance of Krishna playing the flute. Mm. Okay, imagination can run wild, but I felt like I had darshan of Krishna, and I felt like Maharaji had, he had just thinned the veil for me for that one, 10-minute period or something where he made a crack in the veil where I could see. And it was had such a profound effect on me. I couldn't believe it. I bowed down. Any passerbys must have thought I was completely psychotic.
But no problem in India.
In India, right. And then the elephant walked away, and I went back to the hotel. But it was like so vivid.
Mm. That's a good analogy for our experience. We went there to get the veil thinned out.
Yeah. It gets thick so fast, doesn't it?
Yeah. Here, look at us. Here we are. We cannot go one step further back to music, which is the fact that Jai has played, although I think he's going to tell me way less now, an instrument called the dotara, which is like a mini sarod, which is a gourd with strings, similar to a sitar, but completely different.
It's actually made by a sarod. Where sitar is a gourd, sarod is a hollowed out piece of teak wood.
Oh, is it?
So it's heavier, and the inside, what do you call it, the sound chamber is bigger. The whole thing is hollow.
Uh-huh. And so that gets that resonance. Yeah. I mean, it's so highly resonant. It's just an amazing instrument. Anyhow, but is that the same for the dotar that you play?
Yeah,
same.
Just a smaller version. Yeah.
So there are many, many songs, especially in the earlier days, that have the dotar on it. And one thing in particular, and we're talking again about this movie with K.C. Tiwari, who would go into deep, deep trance absorption, which is a loose definition of samadhi, which is very undefinable because, as Jai says in the movie, we don't know what's inside the consciousness of another person, but he sure looked good.
Yeah.
He was going good. But there's one piece in this movie, Jai, and you've seen it. We got this footage of Neem Karoli Baba when first Krishna Das and Danny Goleman and Rameshwar Das went to India together. They were some of the first Westerners, actually, to meet Neem Karoli Baba. And there happened to be a film crew. His name is Amar Tat, who was doing a film on all different gurus that were in and around at that time. Sunseed was the name of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. Anyhow, he had this footage, and he was kind enough to let us use it in this. And I don't think he used everything he had in Sunseed particularly, but he let us use it. So there's this scene of Maharaji with fruit. He wouldn't allow sound to be there for some reason. And he would he was giving out fruit. And it is, you know, really a high-end footage, the best footage of Maharaji that exists, because these guys came over with real cameras. So
I didn't know that Maharaji had not allowed sound.
Yep. Not allowed sound.
That's a trip. I mean, I knew there wasn't sound, but I never knew that that was because Maharaji had said that.
So, but what we did, we took a piece of Jai's music, particularly of this instrument, the dotara, and the poignancy of the music and the way it reflects that moment is, to me, a price of admission to watch this film. But hopefully you all will, if you actually get over to ramdas.org and put your email address in, you will get a notice as to when it's available to be seen. But that particularly is just so extraordinary. And there are many songs that Jai has done. Some he's done a couple with Krishnadas, actually, on Krishnadas albums. One in particular that's also amazing. We'll try and get that into the playlist.
The Guru Prayer.
Yeah, the Guru Prayer. So this instrument and your ability to channel, I mean, Khan Sahib was called the Emperor of Melody. This is absolutely, I am totally convinced, having been around enough with you and with him to know that this is, he easily passed this on to Jai.
Droplets. He passed me a droplet of his melodic ocean.
So why aren't you playing the dotara much anymore? That's my question.
It's so hard. No, I mean, yeah, a couple of things, a couple of reasons. Well, I played it a lot. And then, you know, I played it a lot for many, many years. And I found after a while that it was even harder to play in tune than the sarod because, you know, there's no frets. Since it's smaller, the space where each note sort of lives is smaller. But that's a cop out, you know. I got a little tired of it. I got a little tired of, working so hard to play it in tune. Mm. And I also became, well, you know, through Nubia, I began to be exposed to the wealth and beauty of Brazilian music.
Jai's wife her name is Nubia.
Yeah, and she's Brazilian, and. So I started to get more and more drawn to Brazilian guitar. And the thing about the dotar is you need long nails on your left hand because and sarod, because you're not actually using your finger pads to press the strings, you're using your nails.
Wow.
And to play guitar, complicated voicings and chords, your left hand nails got to be really short.
Mm.
So, there you go. It's not even a good reason.
It's not bad though. Actually, mechanically, it makes sense.
It's true, but. And you know, I do sometimes get nostalgic for the dotar, so I pull it out, and boy, it's a hard instrument to play. And then not having the nails, I just get frustrated. But I'm working on a new song, and the whole end section of the song is this kind of tapestry of guitars, but it needs something to go on top of it. So just yesterday, Nubi and I were walking, and oh, by the way, we saw this huge rattlesnake in our path yesterday. Oh. I feel it was some kind of spirit blessing. Well, it didn't bite us, thank God. I just had the thought, well, I gotta get the dotar out. I'll practice it for a week. I'll grow my nails, and I'll play it on this song.
Mm.
Because it has a voice. All the instruments have their own voice, and it has a
unique, phenomenal.
It's such a beautiful sounding instrument.
So if you're going to do that, and you're going to grow your nails enough to be able to do this thing, take it one step further and just jam on some other things. Okay? See, this is why, you know, this is what I used to do to Jai a long time ago. Hey, what about this? Come on, this would be this, this would be that. I'm glad to hear that there's a new recording going on. And of course, everybody will know about it from us when it's available.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Then, you know, I think like, sometimes I think, well, what are you doing? You're crazy. Why are you making another album? Don't you think the world has enough of Jai? But it's, you know, it's an artist's, what are you going to do? Make more art. And devotional art.
It's called sharing.
Yeah.
It's called sharing. This is what Ram Dass was about all the way up to the moment he left. He just had that impulse, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's part of our legacy.
Yeah.
And by the way, I was thinking about that, you know, just everything that's brought back, all of the, you know, the central importance of kirtan as part of the legacy that we were given. It's, you know, that you have been and Krishnadas has been and others so important.
You too. You and know, it's been the mainstay of our practice, kind of.
Yeah. And I thought, but, you know, us talking, yes, we're being a little bit nostalgic here, talking about our experiences in the past, but it's all related to who we are now. But it's not nostalgic. The presence that we experience, and this is my grand thought for the day, it's embedded in the satsang that we hang with in every way. The things that you do, the thing Krishnadas does, the love, serve, remember, the Ram Dass, all of the things that we've been doing, it's really embedded in the satsang. I mean, I felt that so strongly. Unfortunately, of course, we haven't been able to meet the way that we did before this pandemic, which is over, but not really.
Yeah,
we're hoping it's going to be more endemic, but it's, whoa.
Over, but not really. That's the way to put it.
Yeah, so it really is. And, you know, there's that famous quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, the coming Maitreya, the coming Buddha is the Sangha, is the satsang. And that's so apparent to me in the ways in which we get, even getting together online, you know,
yeah.
Or just this right now. It's no different. It really isn't, you know.
You know, when I do kirtan, not publicly, that's another thing. It's not different, but it's different. But when I do kirtan at home with a bunch of satsang friends, I know that some people, some of us, appreciate it with more of like, this is like the good old days. And I know that others of us, like me, like you, I know, like Krishnadas, when we're doing kirtan, and this is public as well as private, it's not nostalgic for the past at all. It's like completely in the present, you know, calling, begging, feeling and not feeling, you know, all the different shades of that presence. And yeah, sometimes when I'm singing, you know, I may like for a moment imagine Maharaji in the temple, you know, which is a memory kind of. But it's just a memory that triggers in the current moment the feeling
above
of his presence. And sometimes, you know, I feel like even the times of not feeling him, I feel are his grace. Because like, I don't know, in the times of separation and not feeling connection, you know, that heart muscle gets really strong, you know, because there it's anguish kind of when you don't feel him.
And longing is so much of what the bhakti path is about. And it's most well expressed, obviously, through music, kirtan, bhajan. And, you know, this is a primary thing for Jai that's in this music from beginning, from the footprints to this holy madman. And by the way, I do have to mention that we have a compilation coming out of different people that have been on our Ram Dass Soul Land music series, and Jai's been with us. And there's a song called Ladder of Longing that fortunately Jai allowed us to use for the Soul Land compilation number 2, which is coming out in June. This is 2022.
Oh, nice. June is not very far away.
It's like now or a couple of weeks, a week and a half. Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. I actually didn't realize that it was coming so soon.
Yeah. And this is on an album of Jai's called Let Me Burn. It's a great compilation. It's got John Fortes on it, Rising Appalachia, DJ Drez, Londra. You know, some really
Rising Appalachia is on
yeah.
it? Yeah. Those girls are awesome.
Oh, awesome harmonies. Awesome. Actually, John is there doing a song with Ben Taylor.
Really?
Yeah. It's a really very cool song. So that's coming again, you know, just go to Soulland on Instagram or write to get your email up on ramdas.org. And I also have to, well, you know what we're going to do? Because Jai has to go off. So we're going to end right here. But we're going to say goodbye, but then we're going to play one last song. And it's from an album Jai did called Loveland with Ben Liebach, his partner. I want to play Jai Twameva, which is, again, the ending song on the Brilliant Disguise Samadhi of Casey Tiwari. I mean, it's so perfect there. I you know, thank God for whoever thought of that.
I started crying when I saw the ending piece.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got that emotional power. So this is the album it was taken from. And my last word here is I think I've told you this, Jai. I believe I have. But hopefully you've forgotten it, so it'll be new.
I did.
but when my father was passing, about 9 years ago. And so, you know, he loved kirtan. He was part of the satsang. Jai knew him. And so we had some albums there. I can't remember what, you know, CDs, I guess. And, you know, I played a little Krishnadas. And I could tell, because it would speed up, it was jarring. In that moment, it's not never jarring in any other moment. It's like very connective, as he is. And then I had Loveland. And I thought, well, I know that this is more ambient, so this may be more appropriate. So my father basically left within a couple hours of me just playing Loveland over and over. This is a phenomenal record. It's not just music to help your father pass. But it is music to, there's a way, it's really different than most anything you ever did.
Yeah.
I would say.
Completely.
And yeah, and it's so powerful. I guess I just really vibe with it. So we're gonna finish the podcast with Twameva. You're going to find everything, all the links up that we've been talking about in the show notes. Go to BeHereNowNetwork.com/mindrolling. You'll find it all there. And Jai, thank you for everything.
Thank you. It's so great to talk to you and reconnect with you. You know, it seems like our life is a period of, it's like cycles of reconnecting, and connecting. And this pandemic hasn't been easy in terms of staying connected. And thank you for doing this so that we can do that.
Yeah. Thank you. And everybody, we'll see you next week. Ram Ram.
Ram Ram. Mom.
Brahmadeva Deva Twameva Sarvam Mama Deva Deva Twameva Sarvam Mama Deva Deva Twameva Mata Chapita Twameva Saka Twameva Twameva Vidya Dravinam Twameva Twameva Sarvam Mama Deva Deva Twameva Sarvam Mama Deva Deva Mama Deva Deva Twameva Sarvam Mama Deva Deva Twameva Sarvam Mama Deva Deva Yeah.